Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is Mr. Span. Episode 200 apparently had some really major audio glitches, man. You guys couldn't hear any of the audio clips that I was using while I was broadcasting the show. And because I do the show live, sometimes I'm unaware of some of these things, and I should have caught that in my editing process, but I didn't. So I'm going to have to re-release episode 200 so that you guys can get the full experience of what it was I was talking about and not just hearing me gulp down beer in between takes and everything else, man. But I appreciate everybody who's listening, and I appreciate everybody who downloads this again. But this is a re-release of episode 200, edited in full with all of the audio clips so you guys can hear what the hell it was I was talking about. All right. Peace.
Ready.
NBC didn't have to create rape allegations to keep from selling to Bill Cosby. That's like me saying I don't want to sell you my car, but then going around telling people you robbed banks.
For real talk.
Hey man, I'm just gonna say it. If you don't think you sexist, ask yourself why you champion LeVar Ball but think Cardi B should go away.
All the time.
Not everybody's gonna like you, but don't ever, ever apologize for trying to be a better person.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I am your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 200, y'all. We at the deuce. We at the deuce, cinco, something. I done fucked that all up. Yeah, I done fucked that all up. Cero. Yeah. Yeah, man, it's a celebration over here, y'all, man. 200 episodes. Rock out with your boy. We getting old, y'all. I remember when this shit came out. I want to say 96, 97. Nigga was in high school. She was cooled in, right? Now they playing this shit on the oldie station. Everybody dancing at the shit at the cabarets and whatnot. They got hustles and shit designed around this song, bro. Like, it's just, it's like, we getting old, man. But it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. This podcast is 7 years old. We 200 episodes in. And I'm having a good time, man. I'm just like, here at home. By myself, and I'm having some drinks, and it's like Easter weekend, and it's a long weekend because your nigga Span got like 4 days off instead of the standard 3. You know, I know how to use that vacation time, my nigga. I know how to use that vacation time. But, yeah, man. Let me turn that down. How y'all feeling this Saturday afternoon, man? It is fucking raining like hell outside here in Detroit. But I have learned over the past 7 years, man. Excuse me, I have learned to appreciate a rain day. I really do. I appreciate a rain day. So, like, I want to thank y'all, man. Like, real talk. 200 episodes, man. Like, let me say this. Let me turn this off. I have been podcasting for 7 years. January 9th is the birthday of the Span Report. Well, it was the very first episode that I put out. The podcast premiere was January 9th of 2011. When I put the first podcast out, man. And here we are in 2018, March 31st of 2018, and we're on 200 episodes. Now, I will say, that 200 episodes should have been, I should have blew past this particular milestone long ago. But considering the ways in which life kind of like happened for your boy, like it didn't happen as soon as I would have preferred for it to. But we're here, man, and it's definitely a blessing, especially in this podcasting game where there's so many people are getting into podcasting, and they don't, they find out that it really isn't for them, man. Like they can't really, they don't have the longevity to continue to do it. And despite all of the challenges that have been put in front of me, all of the things that kind of prevented me to get in front of this mic and in front of this camera to speak with you guys, man, about the things that are going on in the news and in pop culture and in politics and in sports and whatever else. All of those things have not kept us from getting to this point, man. So I am excited, man. I am excited about the things that we have coming forward. And I am also grateful for the things that we've been able to accomplish so far. Just this year, man, and not only just this year, man, but like where we've come from, man. Like I remember when I first started this podcast, yo, I had a laptop in my living room. I was sitting in my living room with a laptop and a headset microphone and a teleprompter as a application and the Audacity program to record me talking shit. And Audacity used to crash on your boy all the time, yo. So it's still surprising me. Like I use Audacity even now sometimes, man, when like my other recording software sort of like kind of does some bullshit on me. Like y'all found out like the last couple weeks, man, like the sound quality on the shit hadn't been as great as I would have liked. I had to go back to the old trusty Audacity and it doesn't crash on me as much, but yo, man, yeah, man, it's been a wild ride, right? And so I appreciate everybody who's here listening to episode 200, everybody who's watching live, everybody who's going to listen to this later, man. Thank you so much for your continued support and your continued listenership and your, you know, reaching out and letting everybody else know about the Span Report podcast, man. I really do appreciate everybody who does that. And we're going to get into this show. I'm not going to like wax nostalgic too long. We're going to get right into the show. But before I do, of course, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with us here at the Span Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard here, man. You can go ahead and hit us up at that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. And of course, I will respond to those messages here on the show. You can call into the show live. If you're watching the show live, you can call into the show and we can chop it up while we're doing this, right? Also, email me here at the feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Those emails, of course, will be read live here on the show and responded to here as well. You can also hit your boy up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there, man. Chop it up with your mans throughout the week. You can join the fan page, man, over at Facebook? Yeah, go to Facebook and join the group, the Span Report podcast. Well, the Span Report, hashtag TSRP, the fam, over at Facebook, man. And you can become a part of the group. It's just one place for, you know, like-minded folks who like the Span Report to go in there, congregate, talk about whatever it is the hell y'all want to talk about. And, of course, you know, talk about stuff that we talked about here on the Span Report. And those five-star reviews are hella appreciated. So if you hit your boy up with a five-star review on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, those will get read here on the show as well, man. Real talk. I keep saying that I'm gonna get rid of that whole spiel, man. And just like, y'all see the shit in the show notes, right? It's become such habit over the course of me doing these shows for as long as I've been doing them. And especially, I've been doing this show live now, man, probably longer than I did it when the show wasn't live and I was like pre-recording everything. But I couldn't imagine not doing the show live now, man. It's just sort of like part of the process has become how I do this. I couldn't imagine doing this show without doing it live, man. Real talk. But we got a lot of shit to kind of talk about this week, man. Like, it was some of this stuff was stuff that I wish I could have, I had the time to talk about last week, right? Like, it was some things that were happening last week that I didn't get a chance to speak to, and that's probably why I could have put out episode 200 like Tuesday, right? I could have did an episode Tuesday, but you know, like, we've gone back to the one day a week for the Span Report, and then we got the beer and chicken thing going. So, you know, the wifey, and you know, like, she's like, yo, like, hey nigga, like, get off that mic as much as you want that mic, right? So, you know, family obligations kind of come before this, right? But yo, man, there's some stuff I wanted to talk about last week that we're going to talk about, you know, with the Killer Mike situation, man, the March for Our Lives thing. I want to talk a little bit about that. There were some things that were going on. I just heard about this kid that was like, you know, stealing money from Howard University's financial aid program. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Laura Ingraham is finding out that, you know, there are lines that in which you should not cross when it comes to talking shit to people. Unfortunately, that line should have been a couple months ago. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Roseanne Barr is back in the news, man. She's back on television with the reboot of the Roseanne show from back in the 90s. So we're going to talk about the reception to that show, man. A whole lot to get into, man. So we're just going to kind of roll with the punches and we're going to get right into this. But before we do, man, before we do, I have something that what the hell? I thought I was hearing some shit. Okay, I got something that, I got a couple stories, man, that I kind of wanted to share with you guys. So we're going to open the show up with this right here.
Yeah, baby. It's sexy time with Mr. Span.
All right. Now, this first story here in Sexy Time. Many of us grew up and some of our first sexual experiences was that of the dry hump. Am I right? The dry hump has frustrated many a dude with chapped dick and chafed dick. While rubbing up against, you know, not just flesh, but also probably some jeans or some shorts, some shit like that. You know, probably walked away with like blue balls like a motherfucker. But that was the best it was going to get for you, right? Because she wasn't ready, right? It was the best she was going to get and you had to take what she was going to get, right? So dry humping has a long history, man. Like, you know, back when, you know, before everybody was like ready to just kind of go all the way and before like salad tossing became normal and before like people was bragging about, you know, giving the best head ever. Yo, dry humping was the shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, dry humping was like, yo, man, like, we did a lot of heavy petting, my nigga. Like, you know, I French kissed her for like half an hour, my nigga. And my dick was wet at the tip and shit. Like, niggas used to have these conversations. But my dick was wet at the tip. But yeah, man, like, shit. I mean, we didn't go all the way, but shit, I might as well have, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man. So dry humping has been a thing, right? But some enterprising young dude has decided that dry humping can actually be a business. So I found this story here on Facebook. As a matter of fact, let me go about the business of sharing this on the screen here for you guys to be able to, you know, kind of see this here for yourselves as we talk about this. Hold on, let me pull this up. And there we go. So, yeah. So, check this out, y'all. There's a business of dry humping. And, yo, people are paying for this dude to hump on them. And they call it therapeutic, man. They feel like it's a therapeutic thing. So, we go check this story out. Here's the video here.
My name is Nico, and I do professional dry humping.
How do you become a professional dry humper?
Actually, I prefer the term alternative love therapy. When you come in for an alternative love therapy, you're getting a full eclectic mix of Eastern medicine that I've brought right back here to the heart of Santa Monica.
Hold on. Not the air mattress with the leopard prints sheets, my nigga. Like, not no, he did the air mattress with the leopard print sheets. He's really going all out for this. Right? He's going all out, and it looks like he's having this business. He's selling this business from his apartment. He doesn't have like a storefront or anything. This shit is happening in his apartment.
My clients come to me for a variety of reasons. Some are lonely. Some of them are just trying to recapture their youth, the innocence before sex was considered mandatory.
I find it nostalgic. Now everyone wants to have casual sex, but it's all about the raw passion when I was younger.
The benefits of alternative love therapy are amazing. Decreased stress levels, increases in serotonin, decreases in cancer rates, healthier lifestyles, happiness.
Wait, decreases in cancer rates? I don't know, bruh. I don't know. That sound kind of dubious, man. I mean, I get that you like the dry humping thing is like, it's nice. I ain't knocking it. It's nice, but the whole is going to like keep you from getting cancer. It's going to reduce your cancer rates, man. That's questionable.
These are just all some of the small benefits that you get from dry humping.
It makes me feel like a goddess, and it really allows me to focus on the real human connection. And I found it therapeutic, and that's the magic about it.
Alternative love therapy is magic. It's what makes outer core so amazing.
It makes me feel warm in this lonely, cold world. I mean, that is why I come here.
You can't dry hump another human without creating a connection. And that connection is what moves the world forward.
Well, all right. Yeah, so that was happening. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not knocking his business practice. The idea that it reduces cancer, though, I find that a bit dubious, man. I mean, just kind of come out and say it like, yo, dry humping, you know, to a lot of people feels nice. You know, it feels nice to be close to somebody. It's about as close as you can get to somebody without having actual sex with them. You know, so there's those benefits, I guess. But yeah, man, I don't know. I'm actually kind of amazed that people are paying someone for the opportunity to dry hump them. Like I'm kind of amazed at that sort of a thing. Like, you know, usually when people pay for, you know, some sexual activity, they kind of like, well, I mean, this could be my own ignorance speaking here, but just kind of makes me, you know, like people kind of want to like, you know, go all the way, man. Like, you know what, like, do you finish? Is that part of the thing? Like, do you finish? I mean, these are questions that I get, right? Do you finish when you do the dry humping thing? Like, do you dry hump to completion? Because I know for the fellas, we can dry hump to completion. I'm not necessarily sure how this benefits the women, and so to speak. I don't know, you know, because all we need really is like some friction and a little bit of lubrication, and like dudes is like, you know, we could pretty much come damn near wherever. So I kind of wonder what the appeal is for the women who participate in this. Yeah, man, it was interesting, right? It was interesting. We got another story though, man, that was actually in Sexy Time too, man. So where is my other story? Where is it? And I know I got it. So wait, let me do this. Let me make this shit easy. Because Pocket sometimes does his own thing for me. So let me make this easy. All right, here we go. So I'm going to read this story here. This comes out of the Daily Mail. And there is a device. It's the world's first device that lets women. Okay. Let me see what the hell's going on here. All right. Let me stop that, because something, I hate when that happens. Auto fucking start videos, man. I really hope Chrome crushes that shit. But apparently there's this device that comes out of that's being reported out of the Daily Mail. It says it's the world's first device that lets women have sex during their periods without the mess. It says a device is available that lets women have mess-free sex while on their periods. The Ziggy Cup can be bought for £35 online at Plant Organic. It is the world's first reusable silicone menstrual cup that can be worn while getting intimate. Says the device, which lasts up to 2 years, sits just below the cervix and creates a vacuum seal to catch menstrual blood. It's flat shape, which women insert into the vaginas using a figure of eight motion, is so thin its manufacturer, Intenima, claims it cannot be felt by the user or their partner. Intenima adds that the non-toxic cup does not cause any dryness or irritation and ensures up to 12 hours of leak-proof reassurance. So they have a video attached to this, and that's, you know what, we can watch the video now. Let me pull that screen share right back up for you guys so you can see that also. Here we go. And that is loud. There we go. That's better.
Ziggy may not look like any other cup, but its flat fit design is just as simple to use. Before using for the first time, we recommend sterilizing your cup in boiling water for 5 minutes. For regular use, soap and water will do just fine. When you're ready to use Ziggy Cup, wash your hands and sit on the toilet. Use your thumb and forefinger to squeeze the sides of the rim together. Then insert into your vagina back rim first. Instead of pushing it up like a tampon, guide it down and back toward your tailbone. Once the back rim is past your cervix, push the front rim up, tucking it behind your pubic bone. This will keep Ziggy Cup securely in place for up to 12 hours of leak-free protection.
Huh.
To remove, insert a clean finger into your vagina and hook it under the front rim. Pull slowly, keeping the cup parallel to the floor to avoid any messy situations. Then, empty your menstrual fluid, rinse, and reinsert. Once you get the hang of Ziggy Cup, you'll never go back to using anything else.
Well, all right. I know it's a whole lot of fellas who don't necessarily mind running red lights and shit. Listen, ladies, let me know. Is this something that you would actually add to your, to the repertoire, right? Like to the, you know, I know we have like sex toys and stuff, man. Where like, you know, dudes use cock rings for all sorts of reasons. And, you know, you got like, you know, of course condoms are a thing, but, you know, you got like the, you know, the dildos and like the vibrators and whatnot. Is this something that you would choose to use for your sexual experiences while having sex? Or while having sex on your periods? Is this something that you feel like you would use regularly? Like, is this a thing? So, Like, is this a thing for you? So, there's a poll on thespanreport.com right now on this episode, episode 200. And I'm asking, basically, yo, ladies, is this something that you would consider using? You can go in there, vote in the poll, and we will, you know, of course, read those results on the show next week when we have those results. So yeah, man, the Ziggy Cup, is it a thing? Is it something that ladies would consider using having sex while they're on their period, man? I thought that was a little interesting, yo. You know, because like I said, man, I know a lot of people talk about, yo, put a towel down under me and all this other stuff, man. And I know a lot of dudes that they don't care. So yeah, man, that might be, they might have a little hit on their hands when it comes to that particular product, man, right? So yeah, that is it for Sexy Time with Mr. Span. But we are about to go into our news, man.
Hey,
All right. So, in the news, man, like, Roseanne Barr is back, right? The show Roseanne, is, it premiered this week. It got tremendous ratings. I think they said that it had like 18 million viewers for the first two episodes. I think it was a two episode, premiere, and they've already been renewed for a second season after those two episodes. So I'm going to read this story here. This comes out of the NewYorkTimes.com. And it says, Roseanne is going to be here for a while. 3 days removed from his blockbuster premiere, ABC said on Friday that it would bring back the revived sitcom for another season. After Roseanne drew 18.2 million viewers and a mighty 5.1 rating among adults under 50 on Tuesday, a renewal was all but inevitable. Roseanne Barr, the show's co-creator and star, had previously said she wanted to do another season. And when networks find something that works these days, they are quick to lock it down. NBC renewed its reboot of Will and Grace to a second season before the show premiered in September. This month, it renewed the old sitcom for a third go-round, keeping the show alive until 2020. Will and Grace drew more than 10 million viewers in its return in September. Roseanne has something else altogether. Let's see. With 1 day of delayed viewing factored in, the audience for the Roseanne premiere is now up to 21.9 million viewers among adults under 50. The rating went up to 22% with a 6.2 rating. Those numbers will continue to creep upward as more people catch up with it on the DVRs or through on-demand viewing. The current Roseanne season, technically the show's 10th, comprises 9 episodes, 7 of which have yet to air. The next season of Roseanne, which will be shown in part as part of ABC's 2018-19 lineup, is currently planned at 13 episodes. Now, interestingly enough, man, like, you know, one of the reasons why this is such a big deal, man, is because of sort of the ways in which, like, you know, someone like a Roseanne Barr has kind of flipped politically with their messaging, with how they behave publicly. Roseanne Barr, I remember back in the day, man, when like when I was a kid, man, Roseanne Barr wasn't necessarily a darling of the right. Roseanne Barr was considered crass. Roseanne Barr was considered low class. I remember Roseanne Barr was the first motherfucker really in America to piss people off about how she performed the national anthem. Like Roseanne Barr, when she performed the national anthem, it was at a baseball game. As a matter of fact, let me see if I can pull that damn. didn't even take, YouTube be on it, man. That autocorrect is a motherfucker. So let me pull up this, this Roseanne Barr. This is how she performed the national anthem, years ago. This is back when I was like a kid and shit. And this was like really big news even then. So let me pull this up so you guys can check this out with me. Let's do this here. All right. Here we go. So let's watch Roseanne Barr perform. This is July 26, 1990. So I was like 10 years old when this shit happened. Okay, that's a really, really sucky fucking version of this. Let me let me find a different version because that one sucks. Let me do this one here. Let's see if they got a better one. And that one sucks too. Okay, that one sucks too. Jesus Christ. Let's see if we got one. We got one more where I think she performs it. Let's see if this one is any better.
To honor America, please rise for our national anthem.
Okay, no, that's not it either. Jesus Christ, man. We'll just go with this one and we'll let her, we'll just let y'all hear it. Cause apparently like the video isn't really that good. So
tell me when I should start. Right now. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars shining.
They are booing her ass already. They are drowning her ass out in booze. Now, this happened. This happened. And I remember, like I said, man, this happened in like 1990. That shit happened. And it was a big deal then. And the right hated that lady. She grabbed her crotch. She spit on the ground. She walked off. I think she flipped motherfuckers off after that. This was a big deal back in 1990. So like 28 years ago, big deal. So, excuse me. Roseanne, you know, like her show at the time was considered, you know, kind of progressive. She focused on like the, I guess, the white working class people in middle America. You know, their show is based in like Illinois, which is my home state. That's where I was born. But they're based in Illinois or whatever, and it's like these these white working class people, and it's like it's showing real life, you know, and we can all relate to this, you know. It's showing real life middle America, and this is why that show is such it relates to so many people, because this is what we need, and we know people just like this, right? And so, you know, I get that there's a nostalgia kind of thing that's going on with Roseanne right now. It was a popular show back in the 90s. You know, a lot of people kind of connected to it back in the 90s. And I like the thing of it is, like, I used to watch the show. Not religiously, but I was, you know, kind of aware of it. It would come on. I would watch reruns and stuff like that, especially if nothing else was on television. I would watch it. But over the course of the last 28 years, man, Roseanne has kind of become kind of a kook, right? Like, she's kind of been all on some conspiracy theory, like right wing, like wing nut kind of shit, like lately, to the point where she's dressing up like Hitler and like baking gingerbread cookies and putting the cookies in the oven and eating these Jew cookies. This shit has been on Twitter. She's mocking one of the Parkland kids with a Nazi salute, status on Twitter. She's repeated stupid conspiracies like the Pizzagate shit, and she thinks that Donald Trump is out here breaking up fucking sex rings and all this like crazy shit, right? Crazy shit. And so one of the things about Roseanne being on television and being celebrated right now is, one, like the flip in how people are receiving her, right? A lot of people who like on the left who maybe embraced Roseanne can't stand her ass now. And a lot of the people that was on the right who couldn't stand her ass then love her ass now, even to the point where Donald Trump is out here, praising her on Twitter, you know, congratulating her on the great ratings and everything. And one of the things that I remember I said this last week, man, and the title of last week's episode was this: white voices will not go unheard, right? And the reason why I said that was because, you know, we've noticed over the course of, say, like, I mean, over the course of years, I mean, everybody should know this. I think at this point, it should be like a misnomer for people to like this is like a foregone conclusion that white people's voices are seen as more valuable than those of any other people in the United States, right? So when I'm talking about this, though, I'm talking about Roseanne. She has a show. And a lot of the, she's a Trump supporter in real life, and she plays a Trump supporter on the show. A lot of her real life parallels onto the show, right? And she said a lot of hateful things in real life, and it'll be interesting to see how they balance that on the show. Not that I'm going to watch, but it would be interesting, like, to see whether or not how they balance that on the show, to keep how much of the real Roseanne is going to seep into the Roseanne character on the show, right? But not only that, man, it's like the normalization of a lot of hateful rhetoric and giving a lot of hateful people platforms that we wouldn't necessarily give to, hateful people of color. We wouldn't. Right. Can you imagine if not that this would ever happen, but what if Farrakhan had like a goddamn sitcom and somebody had a show based on someone like Farrakhan? Now, Farrakhan has been someone who says some anti-Semitic things. Farrakhan has said some really, really controversial things about America and America and the American government. I remember not even too long ago, he was talking about America's involvement in the downfall of Libya and blaming Barack Obama for that. Like, can you imagine America giving him or ABC, CBS, NBC, Freeform, fucking CW, any of these networks giving Farrakhan or a Farrakhan-like show airtime? Could you imagine that? Nah, I doubt very seriously any of us could really imagine that seriously, you know? And it's one of those things, man, where, you know, the idea that the white working class America has been forgotten is laughable to me. Because that's one of the things, that's one of the things that people keep talking about with the draw of Roseanne, is that Roseanne is like, she's reflecting white working class Americans, you know, the white working class Americans who felt like they were being left behind with the policies of Barack Obama, and the progressivism has kind of left all these people behind, you know, the deindustrialization of, you know, the Rust Belt and the Appalachian region in the country. You know, you got a lot of people who are out of work and they don't feel like they have a stake in this country anymore, and things are changing way too fast for them, yada 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 yada, right? And ironically enough, when we talk about working class people in America, we never really talk about black people in America. Like, black people have been a part of the working class in America for a long time, right? You had black people who were working alongside of white people in like some of the auto factories. You had black people who were working as sanitation workers. That's working class work, man. Like, you had black people who are plumbers. You had black people who are fucking, you know, pipe fitters and carpenters. And like, yo, we out here doing the work, out here doing the stuff that, like, yo, all these trades and shit, mechanics and shit, like, black people are out here doing that and doing the shit well. But we never get to see their stories. I think, is anybody out here talking about, yo, man, we need to reboot Rock? Rock was out here. Rock was a goddamn garbage man, yo. Like, is there a reboot for Rock coming down the pike? Is Charles S. Dutton getting the phone calls like, yo, Fox need to bring this back? Is this happening? I doubt very seriously that that's happening. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've heard Martin is coming back, but Martin wasn't necessarily like a blue collar worker. He was a radio, he was a disc jockey. You know what I'm saying? But like, the idea that these white folks are not having their voices heard is laughable to me. Like, every fucking television show, I mean, like, every major television show outside of some of the shows that used to air on Fox, like Living Single and Martin and Living Color, things like that. Like, yo, it was all white people, man. We've been seeing white stories all the time. All the time. And there's this narrative that's going on in the country where these, you know, where the idea is that these people are being forgotten. No, they aren't forgotten. They've never been forgotten. Their voices are always first and foremost in the minds of some of these creatives. We are always catering to the white masses. We always are. It's why it's such a surprise to people when a movie like Black Panther becomes the highest grossing superhero film of all time in America. It's a billion-dollar property. The masses thought that black people wouldn't support films like that, that black people wouldn't go out and spend the money to go see films like that, that Chinese folks weren't going to spend the money to go see a movie featuring an all-black cast that has a black director, that have black people in really important parts of the production of that film, right? You got shows like Black-ish on television right now that shows an upper middle class family, black family, living in upper middle class white America, doing well, that decided to do an episode that addressed the kneeling of the kneeling that was going on in the NFL during the national anthem. And ABC, the very same network that is airing episodes of Roseanne right now, while we're talking about voicing or bringing light or bringing attention to the voices of white America when it concerns their political views, especially Roseanne, because she's a very vocal Trump supporter, she gets an 18.1 million people to watch the show. She gets a ringing endorsement from the dude who's currently occupying the White House right now, and everybody's patting her on the back. Meanwhile, the episode of Black-ish that was going to address kneeling during the national anthem, they decided that they couldn't even air that fucking episode. It was too controversial for them to even air that episode. The very same network. They couldn't even just say, you know what, fuck it, we'll put it out on Hulu so you guys can watch it if you're really that interested in seeing it. We're not going to air this thing at all. It's too controversial.
But meanwhile, you have this woman who's out here who is actively trolling fucking the Parkland shooting, students from the Parkland shooting, who's talking about, you know, being Hitler reincarnated, who's eating cookies dressed up as Hitler and putting cookies in gingerbread men in ovens and all this other shit, man. Like, the white voice has never went unheard. It's never gone unheard. And so it's very interesting to me to like kind of like watch how this entire shit just kind of like plays out, right? So America, like, it's gotten to a point, man, and like it's gotten to a point with America where, like, yo, it will show you its ass, right? Especially, and black people are very familiar with the ass of America. Like, we are shown the ass of America quite often. America will show you its ass. And it's also showing us it really doesn't give a fuck about it doesn't really care about equal protection under the law. It doesn't care about equal representation under the law. It doesn't care about open and equal opportunities under the law, right? And I keep saying under the law, but like even in like in the culture, America is showing us it doesn't give a fuck about how black people, Muslim people, Asian people, Arab people feel about what's going on in this country. They made a whole lot of like working class, middle class white folks feel like they're a minority in this country, despite the fact that they run practically everything, right? White people are under the like, you know, they have, I guess they have this thing where like, yo, they're scared they're going to become a minority at some point because, yo, like black people are, you know, having babies and we're still here. And like, you know, Latino people are coming over and like, not only that, like they're here and they're having babies. And like, yo, the browning of America is happening and white people are on their last vestiges of like, yo, we got to hold on to ourselves. We got to hold on to this damn self identity. We got to hold on to this white identity for America because this is the true America, the white America. And we got to hold on. This, yeah, and Roseanne Barr and this particular reboot of that show, although I will not watch it, kind of represents a lot of that for Americans, especially for white Americans, man. Real talk. So yeah, that's going on, man. Another story, man, that I kind of wanted to talk about is Laura Ingraham, man. So Laura Ingraham, we talked about her a few weeks ago, right? So Laura Ingraham was the same white lady, same Fox News commentator who went on television to tell LeBron James and Kevin Durant that they need to just like just shut up and dribble.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
So she says a lot of stupid shit, right? She says a lot of really incendiary things. She says a lot of controversial things, I guess, you know, that drives ratings, right? And gets people like me talking about her ass, right? So Laura Ingraham decided that she was going to say something to Parkland shooting survivor David Hogg, right? Now, David Hogg has been one of the more prominent voices of the Parkland shooting and the March for Our Lives movement. You know, he's been out there, him and I think there's another young lady named Emma Gonzalez. They have been like some of the more forefront activists concerning, you know, gun control and the March for Our Lives and the movement that has kind of sprung up out of that shooting. And so Laura Ingraham decided that she was going to talk some shit to David Hogg on the Twitter streets, man. So I'm going to read this story here. This comes out of Yahoo.com, and it says at least 12 advertisers say that they are pulling their ass from Laura Ingraham's primetime show on Fox News after the host mocked the Parkland, Florida teen shooting survivor and activist David Hogg for receiving rejection letters from multiple colleges. Now, this is the first time that there have been a lot of corporate sponsors who left a show on Fox News. As we remember, what happened with, what's my man's name? Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly, who is no longer on Fox News, who it was revealed to have spent over $30 million settling sexual harassment cases over at that network. A lot of sponsors were leaving his show, right? And this may be a precursor to Laura Ingraham losing her show as well, but we're going to continue to read on here. It says the latest companies to pull their ads from the show are Office Depot and the Atlantis Paradise Island Resort in the Bahamas. In a statement to The Hill, the resort said it does not support or agree with the recent comments made by Ingraham, the conservative firebrand. Although we are an organization that believes in freedom of expression, we do not condone discrimination, bullying, mocking, mockery, or a harmful behavior of any kind, an Atlanta spokesperson said. As a result of these events, we have decided to remove all brand advertising ties to the program. The Daily Beast reported Office Depot's withdrawal on Friday afternoon. On Wednesday, Ingram tweeted a story, tweeted a link to a story describing how the 17-year-old had been rejected by four University of California campuses, UCLA, UC San Diego, UC Santa Barbara, and UC Irvine, despite having a 4.2 grade point average and an SAT score of 1270. David Hogg rejected by four colleges to which he applied and whines about it, Ingram wrote. The tweet drew a swift backlash, with many criticizing Ingram for attacking the senior at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School over a personal academic setback less than 2 months after the massacre at the school. Hogg, in return, tweeted a list of 12 of Ingram's top advertisers, and some of the team's 600,000-plus followers responded by contacting the companies and urging that they pull their ads from the Ingram angle. Pick a number 1 through 12, contact the company number to that hashtag. Top Laura Ingram advertisers are Sleep Number, AT&T, Nutrish, Allstate and Esurance, Bayer, Rocket Mortgage, Liberty Mutual, Arby's, TripAdvisor, Nestle, Hulu, and Wayfair. Several companies on Hogg's list, including Nestle, Wayfair, Hulu, Nutrish, Johnson & Johnson, Expedia, and TripAdvisor, have done just that. Ingram issued an apology on Thursday, saying that on reflection in the spirit of Holy Week, I apologize for any upset or hurt by my tweet caused him or any of the brave victims of Parkland. Now, it took for her to lose advertisers for her to feel like, yo, this is probably the wrong thing for me to do. And this is something that is really like kind of it's almost like common practice for a lot of these like conservative firebrand as like commentators to do. Like they are constantly trying to see how far they can push the button, how far they can go over the line before somebody decides to check them monetarily, because it's really how you kind of got to go up against this, right? You got to kind of hit them where the pocket in their pockets, because, yo, truth be told, man, like they got a lot of people who are like, you know, cheering them on to do this sort of thing. You know, she has a platform on Fox News. She's on in prime time. She's on in prime time primarily because Bill O'Reilly asses ain't there no more, right? But she's on in prime time. She has an audience who is pretty much is like an echo chamber of like, yo, she's right. You know, these goddamn kids are trying to take away our guns. We can't let these damn children. We can't let the children take away our goddamn guns now. We can't let them do it. Right. Because that's really what a lot of these folks who are attacking these kids are doing. They kind of feel like, yo, this is an existential threat to the Second Amendment. Right. Because that's how the right wing and that's how right wing media has kind of, you know, framed this discussion. When we talk about gun control, we talk about, yo, they feel like, yo, they told me I'm taking my shit. Right. And of course, like, you know, when I talk about this, you know, I'm someone who like exercises the Second Amendment. I am someone who owns guns and carries guns like daily. Like, I can understand where those kids are coming from. I haven't been on the opposite end of a gun in a long time, right? A long time. I can understand where those kids are coming from. So there's an empathy there. There is a there's an understanding there as to why they feel the way that they do and why they want these things to happen. I may not necessarily agree with all the things that they're talking about, but I understand it and I get it. Right. And so when it comes to a lot of these conservative people, man, it's like, yo, they're getting their jollies off of like, yo, attacking kids who were just shot at not even a month ago, who lost friends in a shooting just a month ago. Like, this is what we're doing. We're going after kids, man. Kids. What's wrong with this fucking picture? And I know a lot of these people are talking about, like, yo, these kids are out here. They're activists now, man. They're activists. They're free fucking game, man. I can go after these damn kids. They're free fucking game. They're out here talking this shit. Then they can take my talking shit, too. No. That's
not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
No. Many of the people who are talking shit about these kids have no fucking clue what it's like to be on the opposite end of a gun. Many of them don't even although I think a lot of gun owners talk about, like, yo, shooting somebody, many of us really aren't prepared to, like, have to shoot somebody. We really don't want to do that, right? The responsible ones, anyway. Like, you got a lot of people who are out here just, like, reckless as all hell, and they think that they should own a tank, or they should have grenade launchers and every fucking thing else. It's just weird, man, like, watching these people go about the business of attacking kids, the same kids who were actually fucking, like, so they survived someone assaulting their school, and they walked out of it. 17 of their friends are gone, and you got these adults coming at them sideways, right? Now, I know as someone who has been a proponent of Black Lives Matter, or someone who supports that particular movement, as someone who is also a gun owner, man, like, you know, I'm conflicted in the ways in which the movement has been received, right? Like, I watch how the movement has been positively received, and I notice the difference in how it's received and how Black Lives Matter was received. I also know that there's a difference in how gun control is, I also noticed the difference in how gun control is spoken about when it comes to white victims and Black victims. You know, there's a definite difference there. It's just weird, man, like, watching grown people go after kids after having something like that happen to them and not feeling any sort of, like, any fucking remorse behind how they're going after kids. Like, the kids are free fucking game to them. And, like, this, like, the coarsening of America, man. Like, it's, like, the way in which, like, this is Trump's America, dude. Like, that's just pretty much what the fuck it is, man. We live in a fucking, it's, so, yeah, man. But that's enough about that shit, man. That was, that was Laura Ingraham shit. But we still got some more news, man, and we're still talking about guns, right? Because one of the stories that I kind of wanted to talk about, and I didn't really get a chance to talk about this last week, was Killer Mike, right? So Killer Mike decided that he wanted to do an interview with Caulion Noir of NRA TV, and he has some really provocative things to say. Not only about the march for our lives, man, and the movement surrounding that, but about Black gun ownership. And the interesting thing about this is that, yo, he went to NRA TV to talk about this. So let's see. This is on billboard.com. Do they have the video of this? Let me see if I can pull up the video of him on the NRA TV channel. And it's not on here. So I'm going to do this. All right. So this here is a 6 minute and 46 second video. So we're going.
So I have to ask, what are you really marching for? Because from where I'm standing, it looks like a march to burn the Constitution and rewrite the parts that you all like in crayon. No one can point this out better than Killer Mike.
Another thing, too, man. Caulion Noir. There was a time where I thought that Caulion Noir had some really common sense shit to say about guns and gun ownership, especially Black gun ownership. But over the course of time, man, Caulion Noir has become really like, yo, this dude is a shill, dude. Like, Caulion Noir has become the black face they trot out anytime we talk about Black gun ownership, and they want to say, hey, here's our nigga right here. All right. This is how Caulion Noir is getting, like, paid. Like, he's the nigga that they send out. Anytime you talk about the NRA being racist, they send this black motherfucker out here, right? So let me share this with you guys, man, so you guys can check this out. Where's the screen share? Come on, where'd it go? There we go. So let's do this.
Who not only knows how guns can solve the problems society faces, he can tell you firsthand what gun ownership means to this nation's safety and its structure. With everything that's happened, like with the Parkland shooting.
Yeah. Very tragic.
Very. And it was odd to me. I know why it's being done. You know, it's systematic.
Yeah.
But this idea that because I'm a gun owner, or I'm hardcore about the Second Amendment, or yeah. you know, from that perspective, it's like, that doesn't mean that I lack the empathy or the ability to sympathize.
Not at all.
If anything, it's quite the opposite. Yeah. It's like, we disagree about how we both want to save these kids' lives.
Yeah.
Period. But somehow, because my method doesn't agree with your method,
yeah.
I'm a monster.
Yeah.
Or something wrong
with
it.
That's unfair.
You know what I mean?
I have worked as a tireless advocate on the behalf of children, disenfranchised women in my community.
Yeah.
And I've also worked with gun groups like Georgia's Against Gun Violence that are not, you know, the most pro-Second Amendment. Yeah. But I say if there's a table to be sat at, the gun owner needs to be there. So I kind of try to see a problem from the whole perspective. And there have been things that you've disagreed with me. There's been things that I disagree with you. Yeah. As friends, we've talked.
Okay. So here's the thing. We can have this discussion. Killer Mike, you can have this discussion. You can have this discussion without including the NRA in it until the NRA proves that it's worthy to be of the discussion. Because the NRA, especially when it concerns black gun ownership, hasn't actually shown us anything that... The NRA hasn't shown that they give a damn about black gun ownership. The NRA just hasn't done it, right? You can go all the way back to the Black Panthers when the NRA was instrumental in the passing of the Mulford Act in California to strip the Black Panthers of being able to walk around with their rifles out in the open, as was the law back then, right? It was a law for you to be able to walk around with a rifle loaded and out in public. Open carry is what we call it now, right? It was law in California to be able to open carry with a rifle in California. And the Black Panthers were doing what? They were patrolling their neighborhoods. They were observing the police officers performing their duties and making sure that the police officers in Oakland, California were not abusing would-be criminals or citizens, basically, right? We were observing the police doing their duties. And the NRA, with the help of Ronald Reagan, Republican angel, Republican saint Ronald Reagan, was adamant about taking the guns out of the hands of black folks. Let's make that fucking clear. The NRA was also instrumental in not really advocating for the rights of Philando Castile, who was a licensed concealed carry holder in the state of Minnesota, who identified himself as a licensed carry holder. I'm sorry, as a licensed concealed carry holder who also identified and let the cop know that he had a gun in the car with him. He was also in a car with a woman and a child, and he was still gunned down by the police. The NRA didn't do anything. The NRA didn't say anything. The NRA sat on their ass for a while, and then what did they do? They sent Coleon Noir's ass out to put out a video to talk about the media is the problem with what's going on with Black Lives Matter and black gun ownership. So, yeah, Killer Mike did not have to have this conversation with them. You could have black gun ownership conversations. You could talk about black gun ownership in America. You don't have to include these motherfuckers because these motherfuckers don't care.
Right, but there was something dead on that the woman who's an NRA spokesman said, and everyone just kind of lost it. What's her name?
Dana
says something. I don't agree with everything Dana says, but Dana says that the tears of white mothers are like ratings. And that's so true. And it was so sad to hear her acknowledge it.
Are we talking about the same Dana Lash who was talking about, yo, Black Lives Matter is talking about, you know, Hitler being, their president is the next Hitler and we're going to come back with a hard fist of truth and all this other bullshit? That same Dana Lash? Like, you talking about Dana Lash she said that, you know, the tears of white mothers are ratings gold. Yo, you know what else is ratings gold? Portraying black people like fucking savages when they out here mad as shit because yet another police officer then got off from killing another unarmed black person. That's ratings gold, too. That's fucking ratings gold, too.
But it's true. And black people know it's true because black people say it in conversations in coffin houses to themselves.
There's a lot of people who think they woke out here will realize very quickly they ain't so woke.
You not woke. You not woke. Nah. Wakanda, everybody had guns. Spears and everything else you needed. Yeah, like you can't continue to be the lackey.
Yeah.
Like, people are accusing you of being a lackey of the NRA. Well, you're a lackey of the progressive movement. Because you have never disagreed with the people who tell you what to do.
Okay. This is the same dude. Same dude. Bernie Sanders was like, some people are walking around, and there's still folks who are walking around who think, who believe that Bernie Sanders was cheated out of the Democratic National Committee, the national primary for president of the United States in 2016. There are people who still walk around thinking that. Killer Mike was one of the people that Bernie Sanders would trot out when he would talk about his support amongst black people. Killer Mike was that. Excuse me. Killer Mike was one of those dudes. Killer Mike actually went out and started talking about, yo, he, you know, Bernie Sanders understands Black Lives Matter. Killer Mike was talking about, you know, Bernie Sanders was like, yo, he gave the stage to Marissa and I don't know the other lady's name, but he, like, these two black girls, man, like, he gave them the stage and he just sat and he listened, man, and Hillary Clinton didn't do this, man, and Bernie marched with Martin Luther King and all these other things, man, like, he's one of the people who would a lot. He's one of the folks that a lot of people would say was a fucking lackey of the progressive movement, right? Because a whole lot of people are talking about Bernie Sanders as if he's the next god of the progressive movement, right? They're talking about this dude running for president right now in 2020. He lost in the primary to the person who lost to Donald Trump, but he's already positioned himself as the next runner-up to the Democratic National Committee's heir apparent, despite the fact that he's not a Democrat, right? It's just real interesting to hear Killer Mike be the one to say this shit.
Like, think about that. You have never disagreed with, you've never said to them, hey, hold up. Hold on. A football player just got shot by an armed white man for a traffic argument. A black teenager got shot by an armed white man in a gas station because he had played his music loud. Where were you then?
Yeah.
Where? Like when you went, like, start call, like, you almost have to do like a girlfriend when you list all the stuff you've done for the boyfriend. And if you're not in a reciprocal relationship, why are you in this relationship? Because the same people I see dogging you out will be the same people I see posting a month from now says, why weren't you at our Black Women's March?
I like how there's a lot of false equivalencies going on here too. You know what I mean? Like, you know, interestingly enough, you don't see the NRA come out when a black person gets gunned down by the police at all, right? They say very little, if anything, when those sorts of things happen. So it's very interesting to listen to Killer Mike talk about, well, where were you then? Where were you then? The NRA was never there, nigga. Never there. As a matter of fact, like, hey, y'all, when was the last time y'all seen the NRA come out at a Black Lives Matter event and say that, yo, not only do Black Lives Matter, but Black Lives Matter should also be fucking armed to the teeth with, like, guns to protect themselves from all of this police brutality, man? When have you ever seen that? When have you ever seen that? I want to say not never.
It's not never. Not never.
It's never happened. We've never seen it. And yet Killer Mike is on here acting as if, yo, it was the NRA that was there. Right? But we'll continue with this.
You know, when you have something for so long, especially when you talk about the generations that come into, even me, right? Some things with respect to my freedom, I didn't always feel this way.
Yeah.
There were things that I learned about and come upon them as time went on. But we do. We get to a point where we're like, oh, why do we need this? We don't need this anymore. We're so progressive. We progress past this.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're going to progress us right off a cliff.
Yeah.
You keep going in this
direction. You're going to progress us into slavery.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, people say, oh, slavery can't exist. Slavery does exist now. Slavery exists according to the 13th Amendment.
They never abolished it.
The same people yeah. who are telling you we need to abolish the Second Amendment, they ain't there for the documentary 13.
Yeah.
They're not there at your march to end that.
Many of them are. Many of them are. And that is again, this is one of those false equivalencies that he's pretty much trafficking in this entire fucking interview. It's a lot of false equivalency happening with Killer Mike in what he's talking about with Coleon Noir. I don't understand why, but he's that's what he's doing, man.
You know, that begins to be my question. Like, what is an ally? Because an ally is not necessarily a friend.
Yeah.
Right? It's not necessarily, yeah. It's not fam. We have a mutual interest in something that progresses us both.
Yep.
Why are your allies not fighting your other fights with the same vigor you're fighting these? Like I told my kids on the school walkout, I love you. If you walk out that school, walk out my house.
Okay. Now, I want y'all to remember that line, right? Because we're going to come back to that later. He told his kids, if they walk out of that school, walk out of my house. That's what he said. That's what he said. We're going to come back to that later because this is going to it becomes a thing later on.
I'm laughing, but it's so serious.
That's simple. We are a gun-owning family.
Yeah.
We are a family where my sister farms. We are a family where we'll fish, we'll hunt, but we are not a family that jumps on every single thing an ally of ours does because some stuff we just don't agree with.
Here we are. We have a march that's going on next week. And our biggest celebrities are donating millions to a march.
Yeah.
While our inner city schools over here are in deplorable conditions. We're donating $3 million to a march about gun control.
Yeah.
But yet we have communities over here that are in economic downturn. Like, it's ridiculous to me.
Yeah. You know what's even more ridiculous? Corleone is having a fucking military parade to the tune of $30 million fucking dollars that your president is advocating for. He wants a fucking parade of military. He wants tanks and shit rolling down fucking Washington, D.C. He wants a flyover of F-16, like whatever the fuck those planes are. He wants all of that shit. He wants a military-ass parade to the tune of $30 million. And you mad about some celebrities who are supporting some kids who find an issue that they find important. Who are giving voice to an issue that they find important. But you have absolutely nothing to say about this $30 million fucking parade for your president, who actually just wants to be a goddamn dictator and who's seen dictators do this before. He wants a parade to celebrate the America's military might. $30 million to $3 million. Where are your priorities, nigga? Where are you at?
Celebrities often don't know what to do. They're told what to do. I had a celebrity, very famous, like sold well over 20, 30 million records, called me and said, "Hey, Mike, what you doing right now?" I said, "I ain't doing nothing." He said, "Could I call you?" I was like, "What's up?" He called me. He was at a radio station. They were pressuring him to do a anti-gun thing. And I could tell he wasn't comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And he said, "Would you mind explaining them and why you?" And I would say, very simple. Yeah. I said, "You know, I'm African-American, you know, 54 years out of apartheid. I'm very pro-Second Amendment. This is why. And before you say, well, what about the children? My daughter goes to Savannah State University. There was also a shooting on that campus. Talked to my wife and daughter after that. The decision was, we're going to go to Savannah. She's going to get a gun and train more."
Okay. So, interestingly enough, right? So, we're talking about whether or not his kids have a mind of their own. And he said him, his wife, and his daughter had a conversation about what she should do and what she would do after a shooting happened at her school, at Savannah State University. And he's also already talked about his kids not being able to walk out of class for, you know, the March for Our Lives. Don't step out of class or step out of my house, right? How much of that conversation was, "No, daddy, I don't want a gun. I don't think a gun would really help me in this particular situation. A gun isn't even legal on the campus that in which I go to school at. I shouldn't even have it, or I risk going to jail because of it." No, he's on some, "No, you're going to have a gun. You're going to train more because I need you to have a gun," right? Now, as somebody who owns guns, as someone who uses, well, not necessarily uses a gun daily, but walks around with a gun on pretty much every day, like, I also understand that, like, yo, it's not necessarily for everybody, man. Everybody isn't necessarily equipped for it. Everybody isn't, they're not comfortable with it. Everybody doesn't want that responsibility, and they shouldn't have it forced upon them, right? So the idea that he had a conversation with his wife and his daughter, and they just came to this conclusion, like, yo, she walking out of there with a gun, and she needs to go get more training. In the event that because another shooting happened or a shooting happened at her school, as opposed to, maybe we should go to another school. Maybe we should like think about alternative ways for you to gain this degree. Right? I have a hard time believing with Killer Mike that this particular conversation went that, like, she wanted to have a gun. I just have a hard time. She may have very well wanted to have a gun, but I have a hard time believing that she came to that conclusion on her own simply because of this conversation and because of the way Killer Mike talks about this and because of the way he's expressed this in this particular interview already.
And after that, they say, Mike, we never heard that perspective. We surely respect and understand it. And they start pressuring him to do something he didn't want to do. And that ain't just guns. When, as a celebrity, they ask me, hey, will you do this anti-bullying drop for radio? Absolutely not. Why? Because your child needs to get punched in the face so he can learn to punch someone back. Uh-huh. And that isn't saying that it's right to be punched in the face. That's saying as sure as you're an adult, something or someone's going to punch you in your face. And you have to develop the aptitude and the fortitude to fight back. And that's just not in the physical.
Yeah.
You know, we are raising a generation of kids where everyone gets a trophy. But in real life, everyone don't get a trophy.
No.
You know, in real life, the cops don't come on time. You know, in real life, depending on where you live, you're not going to have the time to try to logic your way out of something.
Yeah. All right. So that's the end of that particular video. And that was the video that went viral last week. That was a video that pretty much everyone was talking about last week, right? So Killer Mike, after that video came out, he really had like a whole, like, folks were, you know, they were in his ass, right? Pretty much everybody was in his ass. Like, Killer Mike came out, he started putting apologies out on Twitter. I don't have those apologies here, so we're not gonna even try. I'm not gonna even bother looking for him. Y'all know he put him out on Twitter. Y'all probably heard him already, right? But he also did some shit where he went on the Tom Joyner Morning Show. And he talked about it on the Tom Joyner Morning Show. And he talked about it as if he was taken out of context, that we didn't hear what the fuck we heard on the first interview. So I'm going to pull this up, man, so you guys can see this also. Because, again, like I said, he's talking to us as if people didn't hear what the fuck they heard, man. And I think that's the most infuriating thing about this entire thing. Like, Killer Mike is out here doing this whole shit, and I've been saying this for the last few weeks, man. Like, it's like, you got a bunch of niggas who are being contrarian for the sake of being contrarian because they think they make it look smart, but really they're just the contrary nigga that everybody's rolling their fucking eyes at, man. Like, yo, you're not fucking deep. It's not deep at all. And Killer Mike is out here acting as if he's smarter than everybody else. Like, everybody else didn't hear what the hell that they thought they heard, right? So we got this Killer Mike interview on what's that on the Breakfast Club, on the Tom Joyner Morning Show. So I'm gonna pull this video up and we're gonna listen to this at least a little bit of it here.
Rolling, he's in Washington, D.C.
Where were you this weekend, Ron?
Oh my God, Detroit for the NABJ, Black Journalist Board meeting, but also spoke to the Ann Arbor, Michigan Alphas. And before that was in Denver, speaking at the Alpha Western Regional Convention. So
yeah. Get to the shit.
So I'm on the plane yesterday, and I am checking Twitter, and I'm seeing folks go off on Killer Mike. And how dare he support the NRA, and how is he against these young people for the March for Our Lives on Saturday, and all this sort of stuff. And so I hit him up, and I said, Mike, would you like to talk about this on Tom Joyner in the morning? And Killer Mike is here with us right now. First of all, glad to have you here. So first, you did an interview with his brother with NRA TV. And they ran it on Saturday. But when did you do the interview?
Well, no, it didn't run. It re-ran on Saturday. His name is Colin Knorr. And it ran a week ago. And then NRA TV, you know, someone at NRA got cute and dropped it on top of, you know, the biggest youth-led march our nation has probably ever had. And I'm sorry for that happened. I don't have any control of that. But my interview was about African-American gun ownership in the era that we're living in now in this country. And it was a week old by the time you guys saw it. Mm-hmm. And if you saw my interview, that's what I talked about.
Again, you can have that conversation without including the NRA at all, because the NRA doesn't give a fuck about black gun ownership. They just don't. And they've shown us plenty of times before. They don't.
Even when people refer to me saying, you know, I told my kids, you walk, I walk in my house. That was because my son is flunking math. And I'm mad at his butt because he needs to pay attention in class. That's what any black parent would told. That's what my black parents told me.
He didn't say that the first time. Remember I told y'all it was going to come back? He said that he told his son that he better not walk out of that class because his son is flunking math. Now, check this out. They was going to be out of class for fucking 15 minutes, yo. 15 minutes ain't going to get your son to pass math class, nigga. It's not going to happen in 15 minutes, bruh. You didn't say that at first. You said, like, yo, if you walk out of that class, walk out of my house. That's what you said. But now it's because your son was failing math class, and you'd be really upset if he missed those 15 minutes of math. I mean, get the fuck out of here.
Hopefully that's what he's going to tell his black son one day. So education is
important. So you were not criticizing, criticizing young people who walked out of school in support of the march.
No, I prayed during the national anthem because my favorite basketball player did that when I was in high school. I told my child, stay his butt at his desk because he's fucking math. And as a parent, I can't regret doing that because I can't give the world a dumb black man. They'll return him to me dead or in prison.
Yeah. Sounds like you came up with that one after everybody was getting your ass. And you had to come up with something to tell everybody because wasn't nobody buying that shit you were saying before. And unfortunately for you, nobody's buying that shit now.
Did you say that in the interview?
Yeah. Well, you should watch the interview. No, it's a very informative interview. 80% of the interview, I talked about poverty and crime.
Okay, but I'm just asking.
I gave an interview about black people owning guns. Yeah, and I'm going to say this because...
Now watch. She asked him, did you say that in the interview, right? He didn't actually address her question at all because he know he didn't say that shit during the interview. He didn't say it. He did not say that shit during the interview. Now he's about to filibuster all this shit around. Watch this shit.
This is not an apology tour to spill for me. This is me saying to black people very assertively right now. You must have a do-for-self mentality in today's world. You cannot say amongst each other that you think your president is Hitler and not operate in a way in which you want to be self-sufficient. I get home from 15 months of touring in 3 weeks, and my former art teacher called me and said, finally, you're going to learn how to grow food as good as your sister. We're going to do a garden in your backyard. I want black people fishing. I want them hunting. I want them growing their own food. I want them shooting and training regularly. Now, that ain't saying Walking Dead is going to happen tomorrow. That just says we need to be back independent. We were independent prior to...
Did y'all hear that sigh? That's just a sigh because she's like, this nigga is not about to answer my question. He went from answering a question about whether or not I asked him. He went from answering a question about whether or not he said that shit to his... Did he say that shit on the interview to black farming? We all the way to black farming now.
Segregation. We were independent 54 years ago. And somehow along the last 54 years, we've lost our way. And we aren't as independent as we were. I was raised by two old people from the very rural South, Tuskegee, Alabama, and Eaton, Georgia. So I know how to do all the things I just named. I would like to know that the average 17 or 18-year-old boy doesn't have to join the military to learn those things. I would like our community to be producing self-sufficient young men and women who are business owners, homeowners, parents that are happily married, that raise us. I think that this country is better when our community is strong. And just like Jesus would say that inside the temple and outside, he said to a Caesar or a beggar on the street, I just was told you tell the truth wherever you go.
So Killer Mike, when I look...
We're allies.
All right. So yeah, man. He said all of that. Never answered that sister's question, right? He issued apologies. You know, he was even in the apologies, he's talking about how much he's an ally of the March for Our Lives movement. As much as he was disparaging allies and allyship in that interview with NRA TV, it cost you absolutely fucking nothing to shut the fuck up. Didn't have to say shit. Didn't have to say nothing, really. Really didn't. You put yourself out there. Didn't have to say shit, nigga. Didn't have to say nothing. You put yourself out there. And then on top of that, to make matters worse, you actually tried to make everybody else act like you tried to make everybody else feel like they were stupid or that you were smarter than everybody else. Like, we didn't hear what the fuck we heard, man. So, yeah, man. Killer Mike is out here on some fuck shit. And Killer Mike is getting all the dragons he deserves because Killer Mike has been on some bullshit for a long time now, man. Like, it's hard to, like, listen to Run the Jewels knowing all of the fuck shit this dude is out here doing and saying. It's kind of hard to enjoy that motherfucking music, man, because, you know, that track for the Black Panther was hot, man. It was. But, yo, Killer Mike out here fucking it up for Run the Jewels. So, we got that. And that was our fucking news, man. Now, we also, you know, because, you know, we can't get out of here without at least some of these.
What in blue blazes is going on out here? Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right. So, what in blue blazes, man? We got some stuff going on. There's some weird, wild shit kind of going on in America, man. Now, there's one story that I got, man. This is actually kind of wild, man. And this... I almost thought I thought about putting this in the sexy time spot, but no, this is pretty much where it belongs. So I'm gonna read this story here. This comes out of CNN.com. It says a Texas lawmaker has proposed a bill that would fine a man $100 each time he masturbates. Or better yet, man, wait a minute. There's another one.
Look, fuck you, fuck the plane you flew in on, fuck them shoes, fuck the socks with the bell on it, fuck your gay-ass fairy faggot accent, fuck them cheap-ass cigars, fuck your yuck mouth teeth, fuck your hairpiece, fuck your chocolate, fuck Guy Ritchie, fuck Prince William, fuck the Queen. This is America. My president is black and my Lambo is blue, nigga. Now get the fuck out of my hotel room. And if I see you in the street, I'm slapping the shit out of you.
I know a lot of niggas who jack off are feeling that way about this particular rule, right? And I know a lot of us are so goddamn surprised about it that it's like...
I'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
Kind of surprised, right? But there's a noble reason for this particular legislation. So we're going to read this story again. Like I said, it comes out of CNN.com. It says, a Texas lawmaker has proposed a bill that will fine a man $100 each time he masturbates. The bill also imposes a 24-hour waiting period if a guy wants a colonoscopy or a vasectomy, or if he's in the market for some Viagra. Representative Jessica Farrar, a Democrat, knows her bill isn't going to get very far, but she proposed it last week to make a point and give male lawmakers a taste of their own medicine. Farrar has long been an advocate of women's health in a state that has made it extremely difficult for women to get abortions. And the bill, by pointing out a sexist double standard, is meant to shine a light on the obstacles women deal with when it comes to their health care. Look what's happening with let's look at what Texas has done to women, Farrar told CNN. What if men had to undergo the same intrusive procedures? Farrar's bill would penalize men for masturbation because such behavior is a failure to preserve the sanctity of life and an act against an unborn child. Even the bill's name, A Man's Right to Know Act, is a jab at pamphlet Texas doctors are required to give women seeking abortions. The pamphlet, A Woman's Right to Know, has long been criticized for being inaccurate, ideologically influenced by religion, and designed to discourage women from getting abortions. One section of the pamphlet says that breast cancer and abortions are linked. Scientific studies have found no cause and effect relationship between the two. We have real lives to deal with, said Farrar, who pointed out that Texas has the highest maternal mortality rate in the developed world. And she's right. The rate of women who die from pregnancy-related complications doubled from 2010 to 2014, according to a recent study. Republicans have lashed out at Farrar's bill. I'm embarrassed for Representative Farrar. Her attempt to compare the abortion issue shows a lack of basic understanding of human biology, said Representative Tony Tenderholt. Imagine a dude going to a woman telling her she don't understand the difference, man. Especially about women's bodies, man. I would recommend that she consider taking a high school biology class from a local public or charter school before filling out another bill on the matter. Tenderholt recently proposed a bill that would charge abortion providers and women receiving abortions with murder. Texas has quite a 1-2 punch to keep women from getting abortions. One, strict laws. Two, lack of clinics. Texas doesn't allow abortions for women past the 20-week mark unless their life is endangered. Under this law, women who are pregnant with an unviable fetus are forced to carry to term. Additionally, women must receive state-directed counseling, must have an ultrasound, and a provider must describe the image of an unborn child to the woman. Now, this goes back to the whole thing of, again, like Republicans and not even just Republicans, but like there's a religious bent on a lot of this. A lot of this is like, yo, you know, there's a lot of people who have this belief that life starts at conception. And that women don't have the right to their bodies, that women don't have the agency over their bodies, and therefore they should not only not be able to get the abortion, but they shouldn't be able to get the abortion unless, of course, they consult with the man with whom they've conceived with. And so, like, yeah, at first glance, when you look at the whole jack off thing, like, yo, you get fined $100 every time you spill some kids in the sink, or you spill some kids on the floor, or you spill some kids in the tissue. Yeah, you should get fined for that. And that's just a part. You can't make a baby without that, right? So, and women don't get pregnant by themselves, right? So, at first glance, you're like, nah, what the fuck? But, yo, man, it's a righteous cause, and I support it. And I hope I know it's probably not going to get past committee and shit, but I actually do support her. I actually do support what she's doing, man. It's weird, like, and I keep saying it's weird tonight, right? But it's weird, like, watching dudes talk about women's health in that way. Like, I am one, like, yo, I ask questions. Like, hey, ladies, is this something that you would like to do? Like, when I talked earlier about the whole thing with the Ziggy Cup, is this something that you would like to do? Like, that's something that you ask. That's not something that you force upon, man. And I think a lot of dudes, like America, period, think they watch and they look at women as if they're property to be possessed and not necessarily full-fledged human beings with minds and bodies of their own that we don't necessarily have control over, man. So, yeah, that's going on, man. That's in Blue Blazes. Another story that's been in Blue Blazes, and this has actually been kind of in the news a lot lately, man, is this whole thing about Facebook and Android and Facebook actually tracking your text messages and your phone calls, man. So check this out, man. I'm going to read a little bit from this story. This comes from, what is this? GZ.com. It says Facebook's reach into its users' data just seems to keep growing. While the company deals with the fallout from the Cambridge Analytica scandal and many privacy concerns it has raised, people have been digging into their own downloadable data archives on the network to get a sense of exactly how much it knows about them. Several have taken to Twitter with the finding that Facebook has records of their calls and messages. Following up on those tweets, tech sites like Ars Technica found that Facebook has been quietly tracking calls and texts on Android phones for years. Now, I have an Android phone. I've had an Android phone since the G1, dog. I go all the way back to the beginning, right? And I remember, usually when you download an app on Android, it asks for certain permissions. It'll tell you what the permissions are for. A lot of it is like, yo, if you have any friends on Facebook and you have them in your phone, like, this is a lot, you know, this will allow you to sync your Facebook contacts with your phone contacts, right? And if you download the Facebook app, we'll let you link those too. So, like, it's like, yo, I when I see somebody on Facebook on my phone, like, better yet, it used to be this thing, like, if you see somebody in your phone, right, and they post something on Facebook, you would see a status update for them in your phone before even going to the Facebook app, right? It's been like that for years, right? There used to be third-party apps just like that for the sole purpose of, yo, I was going, like, instead of asking somebody, yo, can you send me a picture so that I could put this in my phone for, you know, contact purposes? Yo, people were linking Facebook applications to their phone books so that they could have, you know, pictures of their phone contacts from Facebook, right? And they would link just like that. And then I remember around Android 4.1, they kind of start separating, you know, some of the permissions, and they started being more more transparent in how the permissions were being implemented. Like, I remember they used to ask you, like, you know, could they have permission to your microphone? Could they have permission to your gallery? Could they have permission to your phone logs? Like, all these sorts of things. Like, they were asking you for these permissions. And I know a lot of folks who never really were reading the permissions that were being asked. They were just hitting okay, 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 just so they can hurry up and get the installation over with, right? So I'm going to continue to read a little bit more of this. It says, when you download Facebook apps, it asks for access to your phone contacts, which it uses for its friend recommendation algorithm. It now makes it clear it wants access to call logs and SMS logs as well. But in the past, Android users may have given Facebook access to this data unknowingly as a result of the way Android dealt with asking permissions for call logs. Now, a lot of this is not necessarily unknowingly. A lot of this is just being fucking lazy, yo. A lot of this is just being lazy. Take, for instance, like, I remember years ago, man. Like, and I think I talked about this shit on the show when Facebook decided that they were going to, like, separate the Messenger app from the Facebook app. I remember people like, yo, man, why are they asking for permission for my microphone? They're going to be listening to all my conversations. Like, well, the microphone part is so they you can actually do phone calls through the Facebook Messenger app. Well, why do they need access to my gallery, man, my photo gallery? Why do they need access to that? Well, they need access to the photo gallery so that they can send you can send pictures through the app. Like, people send pictures through the app. Like, they need that for that. And, you know, like, even during the installation, they ask you, like, do you want to confirm this phone number? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And people would just say yes. People would just say yes. And I think a lot of this, like, you know, folks are like, although Facebook has a hell of a lot to answer for, some of this is like, yo, man, motherfuckers just like, you're too cavalier with your shit. Too cavalier with your shit. Like, you're not paying attention to the permissions. You're not paying attention to any of the things that are, like, being asked of you while you're installing this shit. You're just putting it on your phone because it becomes second nature to have these sort of things on your phone, right? Like, Facebook is one of the first apps that a lot of folks put on their phone. If you got a newer Samsung phone, especially if it's carrier locked, like, a lot of times you can't even take Facebook off of your shit. Like, Facebook is just there, nigga. It's already installed. It's pre-installed on your shit, right? But Facebook Messenger, you can't, you can, you know, decide whether or not they get access to certain shit or not. A lot of folks have not even decided to put Facebook Messenger on their phones at all. So I think what's going on with Facebook, especially on Android, because Android is a little bit more open than Apple, right? And it has its drawbacks and it has its benefits. One of the drawbacks is, like, yo, somebody can take advantage of you not necessarily being careful with your shit. One of the advantages is, like, yo, I get to do what the fuck I want to do with my phone, and Apple can't tell me how to do what I want to do with my phone. Right? That's one of the advantages of having a phone that's kind of like, it allows you to customize it in the way in which you like, as opposed to having a phone where they kind of dictate to you what you can and cannot do with your phone. Now, when you do that, when you take that approach, the approach that Android has where it allows you to do and allows you to customize the ways in which you like, you have to take the responsibility of some of the shit that you do with your phone. Like, it treats you like an adult. Like, hey, man, wouldn't advise you to do that. But if you do, it's on your ass. So, yeah, man, that's been in the news as of late, man. Facebook and out and and data leaks, man. You got to be careful with your shit, man. Real talk. Another story in What in Blue Blazes, man. This is actually something that happened or was actually like kind of recently. A Howard University student employee, Tyrone Hankerson Jr., is at the center of a financial aid scandal. All right. So an explosive report revealed earlier today that six Howard University employees stole more than $1 million from the school and now have been fired after a whistleblower exposed the theft on social media, reports NBC. Says that now Tyrone Hankerson Jr., a former student employee, has been named at the center of the controversy. Hankerson Jr. allegedly scammed $429,000 from Howard's financial aid coffers. Hankerson Jr. has now deactivated all of his social media accounts, but that doesn't mean the internet does not still have the receipts. Photos of the former Howard law student show him living his best life with expensive clothes, designer bags, and even a personal videographer to chronicle the best parts of his life. This nigga had a fucking video. This nigga had a videographer. Like, yo, man, I gotta say, man, social media has made everyone feel like they are a fucking star, man. Like, who need, like, really, like, other than Beyonce, who really needs their own fucking personal videographer, my nigga? Like, really, really? It says, earlier today, Howard University's president, Wayne Frederick, released a statement acknowledging that an audit of the 2016 records found that there were university grants that were awarded to some employees that were also receiving tuition remission. But the funds were mishandled and taken by those employees, which equaled more than the cost of attendance, allowing them to receive inappropriate refunds. While this has been a very difficult and disappointing situation, I know our campus community deserves better, and I'm committed to ensuring that each of our campus offices operate with integrity and are the best that higher education has to offer. An outside auditor spearheaded the investigation, and once the misappropriation of funds was determined, the school alerted the Department of Education in July 2017. By September, the six employees were fired for gross misconduct and neglect of duties, and a whistleblower shared the information earlier today on the blogging platform Medium, which has since been deleted. Frederick released a statement outlining new policies implemented after the incident, including all awards of university grants are now reviewed and approved by the budget office prior to being awarded by the financial aid office. Hankerson Jr. still has a lot to answer for as the memes and posts of disdain created in his honor continue to grow on Twitter by the minute. Here's just a few a sample of the few. Now, we're not going to go into the whole Twitter thing, right? Because Twitter been clowning this motherfucker. Like, I've seen people change their handles to, like, you know, different variations of this guy's name, man. I've seen his pictures being used for, like, all sorts of jokes and shit. But I'm just going to say this, man. As someone who went to an HBCU, Tennessee State University, I can remember financial aid being a bitch to deal with, right? Having the monies available to go to school, man, and making sure that the right funds were available to you when you know that you put your financial aid paperwork in on time and sometimes still not getting the money that was due to you. It's a bitch to deal with, right? And then to have someone at the school not only misappropriating the funds, but not only misappropriating the funds, but your fucking school career depends on these funds. And this nigga's out here living the best of lives on money that was allotted to you to go to school, to better yourself, to better your situation, to have a better life than maybe what you were accustomed to later on. To have somebody be able to get away with something like this, despite all the fucking jokes and shit. Like, yo, man, as somebody who went to an HBCU, we could barely afford to go to the school that I was going to. Like, yo, man, that's a bitch to deal with. So I low-key just, like, I just kind of hope that they throw this nigga, like, I hope they throw the book at him, dog. Like, if he's guilty of what they're accusing him of. Now, I know, like, yo, the Twitter streets is talking, man. Everybody is fucking, like, having a jolly good time roasting the fuck out of this nigga, man. But truth be told, man, like, yo, man, as somebody who went to an HBCU, as somebody who went to college and had to deal with the financial aid office, and the shit not always being right, and sometimes your money not being right, and you're on shaky ground as far as whether or not you can even stay there or be there. This is fucked up. This is fucked up. And so, yeah, man. Tyrone Hankerson Jr. There's a picture of this nigga in Cuba and shit. Probably off of the funds that somebody had allotted to them to go to school, man. So, yeah, that is what it is. But it's almost time for us to get out of here, man. But before we do, of course, we got our ass hat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And our ass hat of the week this week is none other than, yo, man, Louisiana out here showing a motherfucking ass, yo. So the Louisiana Attorney General, what's this dude's name? Jeff Landry. He's our ass hat of the week this week here at the Spam Report, right? Now, we're reading this story here out of CNN.com. And it says, no charges will be filed against two Baton Rouge police officers in the 2016 shooting death of Alton Sterling after an investigation determined that the officers acted in a reasonable and justifiable manner, Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry said Tuesday. Said police shooting trials and convictions are rare for officers. Said Landry's announcement in Baton Rouge, coming 10 months after federal prosecutors determined that they wouldn't file civil rights charges against the officers. Now, who is the head of the Justice Department right now? Jeff Sessions. So that comes as no fucking surprise. But the state had an obligation to Alton Sterling as well, and they also decided they weren't going to file charges. Said it was made moments after he met Tuesday morning with Sterling's relatives to tell them of his decision. It said members of Sterling's family members were visibly upset after the meeting with Landry. Sterling's aunt, Vida Washington Absala, wiped tears from her face as she left. They're not going to bring charges on anybody. Why do they do that? This is white America, Washington said. Attorneys for Sterling's family slammed what they called a biased decision and urged the public to hold Landry accountable. It takes courage to fight for justice. We didn't see that in this situation. Sterling's family attorney Chris Stewart said, but that's fine because we know what the repercussion is, getting you out of office. Outrage over Sterling's death and two cell phone videos that show the shooting led to renewed Black Lives Matter protests across the nation. Sterling, who was 37, was shot and killed by one of two police officers who confronted him outside a convenience store in July 2016. Cell phone video showing Sterling, a black man, pinned to the ground by the white Baton Rouge police officers before he was shot. Police said Sterling was shot because he was reaching for a gun. The officers were responding to a call about a man with a gun. The call was from a homeless man who said that after he approached Sterling for money, Sterling showed him the weapon. Now, the thing that pisses folks off about a lot of this is not just, you know, another example of the police being able to get away with, you know, the blatant murder of a citizen on video. It's the fact that they released body cam footage from the police officer who shot Alton Sterling, and he was already turned up. He was already threatening to shoot and kill Alton Sterling before he ever laid a hand on him. And this comes out after the fact, right? Like, after they've decided, like, yo, we're not gonna do shit about this, but we're gonna put this out here and throw a little bit more salt in the wound. We're gonna salt bait you niggas. Throw a little bit more salt on there. That's what they did, man. And then you see that this dude was already aggressive, already talking shit, already ready to like do something to somebody. And Alton Sterling was the victim in that. Now, whether Alton Sterling had a gun, Alton Sterling was also a felon with a gun. That wasn't apparent at the time where that crime was taking place. It's amazing to watch how black bodies are criminalized, even in victimhood. There's a black officer right now who was charged with murder in Minnesota after shooting and killing a white woman. He's charged with murder. That's something that we want to see more of. But the only reason that police officer was charged with murder is because he was shooting a white woman. And he was black. He was brown. And he was Muslim. Far too often, we see police officers getting off all the fucking time. And then you couple that with, you know, what's going on with Stephon Clark in Sacramento? Shot at 20 times. Shot in the back at least 6 times. Hit 8 times overall. People are getting tired, man. People are sick of the bullshit. People are sick of the bullshit. So, because I'm sure that Jeff Landry had access to this body cam video from the police officer who shot and killed Alton Sterling while he had him pinned down, this Louisiana Attorney General is the ass hat of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ. All right, our champ this week here at the Spare Report Podcast is y'all, man. It's y'all, man. It's the listeners, man. I love y'all. Real talk. For the last 7 years, man, I've been able to get on this mic and pretty much be my authentic self, man. It's one of the few times where I'm able to do that. I can't do that at work. I can't say the things that I really want to say at work. I get to be me here on this mic. I get to say what I think here on this mic. I get to be completely fucking honest with y'all on this mic. And for 7 years, man, y'all have been a constant. Like, and it's not just the listeners, man. It's my fellow podcasters, man. Like, you know, Rod and Karen at the Black Guy Who Tips, Deidre, Twan, Mike, and Brandon over at Where's My 40 Acres, and shit, Rashani over at Single Simulcast. I mean, hell, even Gates at over at Haterazzi, man. Even though we and that dude ain't even a thing no more. You know what I'm saying? But for 7 years, man, I've been able to do this thing, and it's been one of the things. It's been the one constant. It's been one of the one constants in my life for 7 years, man. And it's been something that I enjoy doing. It's been something that I love doing. And I love doing it because I love the interaction that I get with you guys. I love the fact that, like, the support system that you guys provide for me. Like, podcasting really, like, helped change my life, dog. Real talk. Like, y'all seen me kind of grow a little bit, man. Like, not necessarily all the way grow up. Probably grow up in the podcasting thing, man. But, like, y'all seen me grow a lot over the course of the time of me doing this show, man. 7 years, 200 episodes in, man. I appreciate y'all, man. Like, to be able to still be here doing this. And to not only just be doing this, but to open it up to where now I'm in a position to where I can have other voices on here, you know, starting with the Beer and Chicken podcast, and hopefully, you know, having other voices become a part of the Spare Report podcast network, man. To the fact that that's even a thing, the fact that that's even something that a nigga could dream about, and it happened and I made it happen. Like, nobody else could do that for me, right? Like, y'all put that battery in my back that, like, yo, you could do that. Like, we want to hear more of that. Right? It's amazing, man. It's amazing. And I really do appreciate everybody who has been, you know, kind of with me along on this journey. Whether that be Gates for even putting the idea in my head that I could do a podcast. Whether that be, you know, Rod and Karen for giving me something to aspire to in podcasting, man. We're like, yo, they living, my man Rod living off his shit, man. He does what he loves every fucking day. He does what he loves every day. I aspire to that. You know what I'm saying? That is beautiful. I appreciate that. Like, them even, like, for them to even, like, you know, give me a voice, and even Gates for giving me a voice for, like, yo, people, who the fuck is this Span guy? Why do we need to listen to him? You know what I'm saying? Like, I appreciate that. And even some of the listeners from the Haterazzi radio show who may not necessarily like the fact that me and Gates ain't necessarily cool no more, but still listen and still fuck with me. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, like, even my man, like, Aaron over at the Black Astronauts podcast, who has been doing, you know, like, networking and, like, having, you know, a whole bunch of voices on his show, and, like, and coming on my show and talking with me about podcasting, and how he's managed to maintain that and do that and grow that. Like, man, I love that, man. I could talk about podcasting all day long, man. I appreciate how far this game has gone, man. Like, I appreciate everybody who has been in the game at least this long, man, 7 years. And I know a lot of my other people have been in, like, you know, a lot of the people that I still fuck with, man, have been in this game for like 8, 9, 10 years, man. And we didn't get into it because it was something that we thought was going to make us famous. We didn't get into it because we thought it was going to make us rich. We got into it because we thought it was something. We got into it because it was something that we love, man. And, I appreciate still being able to do that, right? And I appreciate y'all for being along the ride with me. This is, yeah, man. And I got so much more that I want to do here. And so, like, for y'all, man, like, I really felt like being that this is the 200th episode, I felt that it would only be right to show appreciation to not only my fellow podcasters, but the listeners who are still here with the Span Report podcast 7 years later. This is beautiful, man. And so that's all I got. That's all I got, man. I really do appreciate y'all, man. I love y'all. And I will talk to y'all again soon. But yeah, man, we're going to do 201 next Saturday. We right back to it, man. On to the March of 300, right? On to the March of 300, man. But yeah, I got to get out of here, y'all. But until next time, fam, peace.